being multi-dimensional. And then we have our honored guest, Sharif Madi, and he was born in the Netherlands, in Muizen, right? Muizen, the one who calls for the prayer. In many places, including the mosque of Dorval in Montreal, where he lives with his wife and two children. And he'll be doing this prayer with us tonight after their talk. He has been learning the teachings of Islam for more than 32 years. Mr. Madi earned his master's in banking techniques from Institute of Banking Techniques in Paris, France, and has a PhD in economics. He's done a thesis in consumerism, how to enhance protection of consumers. He's regarded as a specialist in this field, and he has published many times in newspapers and magazines regarding the subject of his doctorate thesis. And since 1997, he has been an executive in banks, currently works in a commercial banking manager in the National Bank of Canada. I think what I want to say is just in the brief time that I've met these lovely people, and he's also here with his wife, Hazma, Khabib, right? Just in speaking with them yesterday, I think what blew me away most and just touched my heart most is the gentleness and kindness and the generosity of taking some time out of their schedule to be here with us. And we're really, really happy for you to be here. And I'd like to turn the microphone over and welcome our guest. First speaking is Aisha.
Thank you so much for allowing me to speak and inviting me here to this beautiful event. I'm deeply touched by this and deeply honored by this and to celebrate this. So the question that Geshe Michael asked me to answer for everybody here today was, how can Americans reach out to the Muslim community to build bridges and to become friends? So I'd like to just modify that question just a little bit, because I'd like to instead answer a question that how can Americans and Muslim Americans work together with each other to build bridges and become friends? Because I don't think the onus is on one community specifically. I think the onus should be on both communities, because we build bridges that go two ways. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, and how do we do that? So three things that came to mind for me, just going to quickly. I think the first thing that's key and most important is to know that we're all the same. If you strip away religion, you strip away culture, you strip away ethnicity, at the end of the day, we all want water. We all want health, we all want happiness, we all want to be loved, we all want to be safe and secure. So that is something that is unified by all of us. We all have the same organs. We all are built the same. We have same personalities. You can find a similar personality myself out in the middle of a jungle or in Africa, because we are built the same. So I think the most important thing to remember to build bridges and to build communities is to remember that we are similar people. And the story that comes to mind for me when I think about that is because as I mentioned, I traveled a little bit. I was in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and I went up into the jungle. I went and I climbed 2,200 meters, and we were in between. We had to stop and we lived with a hill tribe, and they didn't speak English. I didn't speak their language. They'd never been to the city. I'm an urban girl through and through, and they we were able to connect. We were able to talk to each other without having language. I was sitting having dinner. They fed us this beautiful Thai food. It was spicy. It was delicious. And this little girl came. She tugged on my shirt, and she came and she sat up on me. And there was a woman. She was pregnant, and she had a baby wrapped in one of those beautiful Thai wraps. And I had a camera, and I just pointed my camera, and she said yes. She knew I wanted to take her picture. She knew that I respected her for who she was and the fact that she was there. And the connection without language was instantaneous. So I think things like that, if we can remember with each other, when we meet people from different cultures, different religions, know that we're the same. There's no difference between us in terms of who we are and what we want in life. And I think that's one of the key pieces to help us to build bridges between each other. So the other second piece that comes to mind when I think of this is I'm building bridges for each other. I think of the notion to think. And I say that with the most respect. I feel like thinking is a lost art. It's become a dinosaur that's gone extinct because we see the media, we watch the media, and we believe the media. And we don't stop and think about what's happening and what the truth is. And we just arbitrarily follow. And I think that's unfortunate. Thinking is the single most beautiful gift that God has given to us, second to life, because we have the ability to grow, we have the ability to learn. So I think that's a really key component. And again, I'm just going to share stories because that's what I do and that's what I know how to do. But I remember a friend of mine who I love dearly had said to me, well, you know, Palestinian people, they don't care about their kids. They use their kids as they'll put them in front so that they can be saved. And I thought to myself, I said, actually, that's not true. If you're a parent, I'm not even a parent, if I saw a child, I would grab a child and run for safety. And I think that we forget that people do that and people say that because we just believe, we don't think about it. And I think any parent, if you talk to them, if they saw their child in danger, they would grab their children and they would run. So a similar story, just to offset that. Another friend of mine, again, who I love, she's a beautiful person, she's Jewish, and we're very good friends. She's one of the longest friends I've had since I've been living in Toronto, and we're very close friends. And we traveled to New York twice. We were there earlier this year, and we went to a bodega, a famous little shop in New York City. I love the city. And the owner was Muslim, and so he automatically connected with me because, you know, Muslims, oh, you know, and my name is Aisha, which is biblical, so it was even bigger. So right away we became friends. And so through the conversation, my friend Elisa said, well, I'm Jewish. And right away he changed his whole being. And he looked at her and he said, oh, you're not going to make it to heaven. You're going to go straight to hell. And I looked at him and I said, no, she's not. This is one of the most beautiful people, the most kindest people I've ever met. I've learned so much from her. I've grown so much from her as an individual. So I think the idea of thinking is lost. We've somehow lost it as a society. So I think if we could just remember to think about, well, if we're the same and somebody's saying something to me, then I don't think that's actually very true. So I think those are some of the components that will help us, again, to build bridges and create unity amongst each other because we, you know, we're, as human beings, we're connected. As human beings, we love each other. As human beings, we learn and grow from each other. As human beings, we learn about each other's cultures. And it just makes us better human beings. So I think the third thing that is key in building relationships amongst each other is to engage with each other and go out with each other and don't isolate ourselves from each other and don't go live in a community where there's just people like you. One of the things in going back to school, the biggest mistake people make is groupthink. You know, in a business situation, everybody wants to get along, so they all say the same thing and they go, okay, but there's no learning and growing when you have groupthink. There's learning and growing when you learn from each other and you understand each other. I remember when I was in university, I was working part-time in a branch. And I think the branch experience was one of my favorite work experiences because it was like a community, it was a family. And I'm originally from Montreal. And so one of the branches I worked in was always Anglophone. We're called Anglophones and Francophones and Allophones in Quebec. And I'm not even any of those because an Anglophone is somebody whose first language is English and their parents' first language is English. My first language is English, but my parents' first language is not. So I'm not an Anglophone, and I'm not even an Allophone, because your first language is not English, and your parents' first language is not English. My first language is English, so I don't have a definition in Quebec. But we had, and I'm just going to, for the sake of argument, because it's how I know how to say it, is we had a lot of Anglophones in the branch. And then slowly, we had some Francophones come in. And we had one Francophone. He didn't speak a lot of English. He lived in a farm, grew up with a lot of French people, never really met anyone outside of his community. I'm an urbanite. I have friends from all over the place. And we sat down one time, and I was fasting. It was our fast period, and I was observing fast. And so at lunchtime, I just went in the back, and I was sitting, and he said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm actually fasting. He'd never heard of that. So I explained it to him, and I said, oh, you know, what it's for, why I'm doing it, and I'm going to be eating at this time when the sun goes down. And his face went red. And he said, I've never heard of anything. That's crazy. It's wrong. It's not healthy. It's not good for you. It's just. And he had all these things that he'd never even seen it. And I said, no. And his name's Michel Rochelle. And I love the guy even to this day. And I said, no, Michel, it's not like that at all. And slowly I taught him about it, and he, you know, we became friends. My French improved because of him. His English improved because of me. When I spoke to him in English, he'd be like, what? Because he forced me to speak French with him. So, you know, he became my quarterback. And then the following year, when it was time to fast, he was looking at his watch. He was going, hey, get in the back. You got to go break your fast. So I think it's stories like that that warms my heart, and those are pieces of proof that show that it's possible. We just have to open up our hearts to each other, and I think we just have to accept each other and know that it's okay. It's okay if you're Jewish, or it's okay if you drink, or it's okay if you don't fast. It's okay. It's your choice. It's who we are. And I think if we can just remember those components, then I think we can build more bridges. And I think I'm excited. I think there's possibility. I think there's a lot of change that I've been seeing in the world with a lot of the different, this type of teachings that's everywhere, with the Eckhart Tolles in the world, the Marianne Williamsons. Like, there's just a lot of really good things happening in the world, and I believe that it's going to happen. So I think those are the components that will help us. And I just want to end very quickly. Sharif is going to talk about prayer, but I just wanted to say, the idea very quickly about prayer is another form that unites us, because we're all doing the same thing. We're all wanting to be closer to God. We're all wanting to be at peace with ourselves and find some type of a connection. So again, if you strip away religion, you strip away our cultures, there's a lot of components in our world that connects us and that helps us to build bridges, create unity, and it's possible. I have faith. It's completely possible. So thank you. I'm going to pass it on to my friend over here, Sharif, who's going to talk some more about some stuff, and thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be upon you. I'm really happy to be here, and a big thank to Geshe Michael and Roach for inviting us, giving us this opportunity to meet you people. Thank you for all the team who worked hard to have us here, and also to make it easy for us. We appreciate it. It's my first time in Arizona, and I like the place. I listened first time to Geshe Michael back in June 19, if I'm not wrong. It was a Sunday. And I received an invitation by email. I didn't read a lot of him, about him. I said, okay, the subject looks good. I will go and I will listen to him. And usually what I do, as many of us may do, we will go check the biography, who is the person talking and what he's talking about. So I went there. And I was really impressed, first by the topic itself, and how open he was. Being in a mosque, talking to Muslims, and also the stuff he teaches us that day. So yesterday I was listening to him again, and I would not say it's the same speech, because it's the same teachings, and it has to be the same teachings, otherwise there is something wrong. So I was glad to be here again and to listen to you again, and thank you again. Now, to answer the questions he asked us to talk about, I will make it a little bit different than Aisha, to make it more broad, so I will cover another part of the subject. To me, I think I can do it through 3 points. Communication, perception, and then action. Communication, I think it's what Geshe Michael did when he came to us. So we communicate to us what he thinks, and also He was really open-minded to learn from us. And he teaches us to be open-minded like him. And I appreciate that. This is something I learned from you. Now, communication has to go both ways, as Aisha said. I have to communicate who I am, and I have not to wait for the other to communicate to me who he is. I have to ask questions. And by asking questions, we learn who the other is. And maybe we may ask the wrong person. If I would like to know who a Muslim is, I have to ask many Muslims maybe. There are billions on earth. And I may ask one Muslim who may give me a wrong definition of a Muslim. Or who may misbehave and give me a bad image of Muslims. So, do I have a duty as a learner to ask more than one? I think it's yes, the answer. The second point, I think it's related to the first one, perception. How do we perceive Muslims? Is it through media? Is it through what we heard? I'm not going to start at this point, if you allow me, and taking your time. I will recite some verses of our holy book, the Quran. And it will be the English translations of its meanings. Unfortunately, I cannot do it in Arabic, otherwise I'll be lost here. The goal why I am doing this, this is a verse to give you a definition. What a Muslim has to be and what has he to do. So, I will recite. This is the second chapter in the Holy Book, Quran. It's verse 177. It's not piety that you turn your face toward east and or west. It means prayer, when you pray. But piety is one who believes in Allah, God, the last day, the angels, the books, the prophets, and gives his wealth in spite of love for it. To whom? To the kinsfolk, to the orphans, to the poor, to the wayfarer, to those who ask for it, for charity, and to set slaves free, performs a salah, which means prayer, and gives the zakah, this is the official, the obligatory charity, and who fulfill their covenant where they make it. Something we miss nowadays. And are patient in extreme poverty and disease. Such are the people of the truth, and they are the pious. So, as you see, this is not my words. This is the Quran, and I think it goes right away to your ears, but maybe also to your hearts. We can feel it. If we have money, what can we do with this money? Most people will give up money, only if they would like to save taxes. We know lots of them. But giving money to see others happy, I think it brings peace. Less hunger in the world, less war, and more peace. And I think this is why all of us, we are here today, for peace. Peace be upon you. I have another teaching that I took from our Prophet, peace be upon him. He says, what means? The only difference between humans, not even Muslims, the only difference between humans is piety. And we just defined what piety is according to Islam teachings. It's all what I recited. So this part, the perception. Today I just recite some verses If you read it yourself, it may take a few seconds, but it gives a definition of Muslim. Today, I tell you, if you see someone doing other than this, is he a Muslim? You may question. Because this is the book in which he believes. He believes that these are the words of Allah, God. So, what has he to do? He has to behave, to be obedient to these teachings, to give money to the poor. And this is something we can do. And giving is not only money. We can give our time, our patience, we can give love, we can give peace. There are many things to give. So, it takes me back to the third part of my speech. As I said, Geisha Michael asked us to talk about three actions or ways to shrink or to narrow the gaps between Muslims and the rest of the world. And this one is prayer. So, what's prayer for us? And before I start speaking about prayer for us, which we will also do with your permission, Geisha Mike asked us to perform Salat, which is prayer, here in front of you. I will just speak a little bit about prayer. Prayer for us, it takes many forms. And as a way to answer the questions we set up, this is the third answer, we can pray to have a peaceful world. And this is all of you guys, we can do. All of us. In our own way. We don't need to be Muslim, or non-Muslim, or other religion. We can do it anyway. Pray. And there is a law, you may have heard about it, the secret law of attraction. You get whatever you want. So if you get peace, think peace, you get peace. And let us today think about peace. So I will go to the second part. I don't know if you have questions. We can maybe devote a few minutes before going to the second part, because prayer is not up. It's not time to do the prayer yet. Can we?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you have questions, I will answer the questions before I go through details. How do we make our prayer? When? How? Where?
What is your suggestion on when someone feels like they found the way for them, that they go deeply into it, but still keep an open mind so their practice is deep and strong and in one way, but their heart is open to all faiths? Because this is, to me, one of the biggest stumbling blocks between Christians, Muslims, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus. It breaks my heart. If you have any thoughts on that, how you be deep in your way, but not think it's the only way.
Thank you for the question, and I have been asked this question today. So I have been asked this question today, and I didn't really thought about it when I answered, and I will give you the same answer. Islam is the extension of all the religions before Islam. So, as a Muslim, we cannot believe in Muhammad if we don't believe in Jesus, if we don't believe in Abraham, if we don't believe in all the prophets before. So this is a must. There is no way to believe in one prophet and reject the others. Now, the second message, and this is why I recite the verses, is what we look for is peace. And peace, we find it in piety. When we are pious people, when we make the world around us happy, being it through the teachings of Islam, of another religion, we make a better living for us. I think someone who chooses to be closed-minded, I don't know if it's the right word, it's a choice, and he will pay for it. He will not live in peace with himself and with the people with whom he behaves like this. So, we all may have books, we all may have teachers, but we have a brain, and we have to read carefully and take the knowledge of its source. And if we have doubt, I cannot just take knowledge from one teacher. I take from one teacher and I confirm with another teacher. So if one teacher tells you, look, your way is the only right way and all the rest of the world is wrong, then there is something wrong. It cannot be. We are more than 6 billion on earth. There are not only 1 billion of Muslims. Or 2 billion of Christians. I don't know if I have the right number, but this is what it was like a few years ago. So we cannot, just because we outnumber the others, it's our way that is right. And if we would like to outnumber the others, it's not by the number. It's but what we do. Do we save earth? Do we help poor people? We are all teachers. Do we do these teachings? How many among the 1 billion do these teachings? This is the question.
I think what he's saying is beautiful, but I think it's also openness. I think we're missing that openness. I think it's wonderful to go deep into our own practices, deep into Judaism, deep into Christianity, have that connection with God. But you're allowed to have your connection with God and your Christian connection with God just as much as my friend is allowed to have her Jewish connection with God, and I'm allowed to have my Muslim connection. And I think that's the piece that sometimes gets lost. And I think these teachings that we're getting from Geshe Michael helps us to realize that. And I think I can't agree more with what he's saying. And I think for me, personally speaking, when I met Geshe Michael, I became a better Muslim just by listening to his teachings. So I think to bring these teachings to the Muslim world, we become better Muslims. And I've heard it from Christian people, they've become better Christians. And so I just think if we keep doing that snowball effect, that it will get better and it will grow. But I think the key component is openness and acceptance. I think those are the two, and that's not a religious statement, it's a neutral statement. And I think if we make more neutral statements like that, that we're allowed to, and then it's okay, and it will happen. We just build more bridges, more bridges, more bridges.
Sorry. Thank you, Aisha. Did we answer the question? Anyone else?
I was on an airplane, and it came time for prayer, and one Muslim man, he went to the open place in the aisle, and he started doing his prayer. Then I saw him bowing, and I admired it very much, because I'm scared to do my prayer in front of other people. But he just did his prayer, you know, and he didn't care what people are thinking. But when you bow and when you pray, in your mind, what do you think? What is a Muslim person supposed to think when you're doing your prayer in your mind? What do you think?
Thank you for the question. When we pray, and I will take some of the rest of the speech, we have two kinds of prayer. We have one which is prescribed, and this one is five times a day. We have to do it. Once we claim to be Muslim, and we believe on all what Islam is, we have to do 5 prayer a day. Now, do we have the choice to do it our way? Or are there rules to be followed? And this is a question. And the answer is there are rules to be followed. When it's prescribed for the 5 prayers, we have rules to follow. As we have rules when we read our cards, we have rules to follow. Even if there is no one in the street, we don't go across a red light. It's the same. So someone who takes the ownership of prayer, he does it because he believes in it. He will do it because he is not doing it only for himself, because he is obeying his Lord. He is obeying the one who gives him life and all what he has on earth. So, is he going to care where to do it? This is how a Muslim may think. It's time to do prayer. Should I do it? Yeah. Am I making trouble to others? If yes, don't do it. This is important. If he is not doing trouble by doing it, he takes the place away, he's not making it too loud, because we have not to make it too loud, then it's fine. Unless someone comes and says, look,
You have no right to do it here because it's written over there. Don't do it. So he will not do it because there is another rule. We have to follow the authority. And this is important. It brings peace to society. We are here for peace. The ruler of the land, it comes through constitution, it comes through many laws. They decide something, we will not go alone as an individual and do other things. We have to follow. If we are not happy, what do? We go through constitution, we have to change it, change the laws. It's the same thing. We cannot change the laws. And as a good Muslim, we first will try to do prayer everywhere when its time is due, and I will talk about times if you allow me. And we have to be not disturbed. It's a very important point, and I thank you for that. Any question?
Yeah. So when you are praying, what is the Muslim thinking in his mind when he's praying to Allah?
Thank you. I see that the last two questions went about prayer, so I start my second part right away. And if we have questions then after, we'll... Okay? So, there are two kinds of prayer in Islam. The one that everybody can do everywhere, no rules, you can meditate, you can do whatever you do and you still pray. In your mind, loudly, silently, doesn't matter. You can do it. Like a supplication, you do it everywhere. The second type of prayer, this is a mandatory. And we have 5 times to do it a day. Different times. And it's not like the one we are going to perform today, it starts at sunset and it finishes when the dark is there. It's very dark. So it's around 8:30. It means that we have from sunset, which is 6:42 or 6:43, till 8:30. So we have enough time. And this is the shortest time we have to perform a prayer. Yeah. It lapses. We don't have much time, so we cannot offer us to delay it much. But the other ones, we have more time. But I'll give you an example. The one starting in dawn, in early in the morning, lasts like 8 hours, from 5 to 1 p.m. So we have enough time. We can do it any time between those two times. So this is the first rule. A prayer has to be done on time. What we do in the prayer, we recite Quran, which is our holy book, and we have also some remembrance what we do, that like praising Allah, saying Alhamdulillah, which means praise be to Allah, Subhanallah, great is Allah. So we have many remembrance that we do, and it's not out of the will. There is a way to do it. So we memorize how to do it. We learn how to pray. Why do we have this mandatory prayer? If we don't have a mandatory, an official, a prescribed prayer, someone will say, okay, today I'm busy. I have business, I have clients, busy with something else. I will do it by prayer later on. And he may have a good intention to do it late in the day or maybe in the night. But then he's again busy. Well, it goes to tomorrow, and maybe next week. And this may happen to everybody. People are busy today. And they were busy. Sometimes we believe that we are busy, humans are busy. So, being on time, it gives us a kind of discipline. We discipline ourselves to take 2 minutes, it's not long. You can make it long, but it's not basically long. Because you can extend it as long as you want. The verses of the Quran, you can recite them in 2 minutes, but you can recite them whole night. And there are people who do. So, The second big, I would say the importance of doing prayer five times a day, it's five connections with Allah for us. Allah, God, the Creator, our Lord. Five times we connect. We forget all what we have. Doing business, okay, just close your laptop and go do your prayer. If you think that you are still thinking about what you were doing before, then renew your prayer. Because you have to disconnect. It's an important requirement for performing prayer. Disconnect 2 minutes. And when we learn to disconnect, it's like you plug a battery. When you finish your prayer, you get a break. Sometimes we don't have break. And this is a nice break. A time that you take, in total it's not more than 20 minutes a day, the five prayers, including the ablution, because we perform ablution, we have a kind of washing that we do to perform the prayer. Including that, it's not more than 20 minutes. So, to whom are we giving these 20 minutes? This is the first question one has to ask himself. Am I doing good to myself? Because it starts all with belief. If I believe that I'm taking this time to pray because I believe in what I believe, then it's good time you spend. And you enjoy it. And what we do also in prayer, that we acquire, as Aisha said, I will take again her word, peace. Peace with ourselves. When you don't think about whatever is around you, it's not only about one thing, you and your God, you are in a nice connection. There is no one interrupting this connection. No money, no business, no kids. 2 minutes. You disconnect from life, you connect with thereafter. And you can meditate. You can meditate how long you want. And the best time in our prayer to meditate is when we are prostrating. As we will show you with your permission, we will perform Salat al-Maghrib, the prayer of al-Maghrib, which is the next few minutes. We stand up, then we bow, then we stand up again, then we prostrate, then we... This sequence of actions is what we call a rak'ah, so it's a set. And there are prayers with 3 sets, like the one we are going to perform. There are others with 4, and there is one with only 2. So I will not go through details unless you have questions later on. So when we do this, it takes us a few minutes. We recite Quran. We have, as I said, when we are prostrating, this is the best moment to make supplication. Supplication may to ask for what you want, to meditate, and to think about yourself. After we finish prayer, we call it salat. So if I forget, I say salat, because we distinguish between the prescribed prayer and when you just pray. So we call the prescribed one salat. So if you're salah, this is what it means. So when we finish the salah, it's your day with Lord is not finished. It's not end. You can do more. You can do optional prayer. And many people, many Muslims, will go a part of the night praying. And if you ask them why, they will tell you they get more peace. And the most beautiful time to pray is late in the night or early in the morning, which is a part of the night, the last part before dawn. And whatever your religion is, try it. Just wake up in the morning where you would like not to get up and try it in your way, and you'll see there is a beautiful connection at that time. And as we are all for peace, as we are all for peace here, this is a good way to get peace with ourselves. So it's almost time to go for the prayer. What I suggest, if you don't mind, we can make perform the prayer here. And if there is any questions, then after watching the prayer, then you are welcome. And if there is someone who would like to pray with us, you are welcome. I will make a call for Adam, but without the microphone, because I will do it loudly. I forget one detail. When we pray, among the rules also, we have to face our body, our chest, to Mecca, which is the holy city. And I just checked it with my compass, so it's this direction. So it's not, I'm not choosing it because I like this direction, because I have to go this direction. Okay. So I hope I have your permission to take your time and to do the prayer in front of you. Thank you.
So if anyone wants to join us, you're welcome to come up on stage with us. We welcome you.
Can we all move the chairs back? We're all going to move the chairs back.
Let's move the chairs back. I love that. Thank you so much. Oh my God, I'm getting nervous.
So I will call for Adam in Arabic. I'm sorry because this is also one of the rules. I will just tell you what I will be saying. I will be saying loudly, like singing, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, which means Allah is great. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, which means I testify there is only one God. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, I testify that Muhammad is his messenger. Hayya ala salah, it's time to do the prayer. Hayya ala falah, it's time to win because reward. And then I say again, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, la ilaha illallah. The same what we start. So this is actually what I will say in the few minutes. And then we pray. I will do another one to pray. So sorry because I will give you my China.
So we have a lot of people, so I'm going to ask everybody to, let's try and organize this. So everyone who's standing, come this way. There's all this space over here. You're going to have to, so the performance is going to be just a quick one. You're going to bend down and then you're going to go down to the floor and touch your head to the floor. So that's why there's some sheets. So we'd love to have everybody have some sheets. And yoga mats are more than welcome, my goodness. It's fantastic. And so the direction that we're going to face everybody is going to be this way. So we're going to face this way. So let's create some lines so we can get some unity. So Geshe Michael, this is perfect. Mercedes, come up right here. That's perfect. Just a little bit behind is great. That's perfect. Tim, why don't you come this way? Rebecca, that's fantastic. Okay. So all of you, that's fantastic. And we'll have more people come. Yeah, this is fantastic. This is great. You're facing the right way. Oh my God, you guys are like giving me goosebumps. This is the most amazing thing ever. I'm so touched by all of you.
Get to take off your shoes.
Yeah, everyone, just take off your shoes. And then we're asking you to go on a mat because it's just cleaner. You're going to be putting your head down to the floor. So are we all... Is everybody ready? Yeah, this is perfect. Just form some lines. This is great. And if somebody wants to go right here in the corner, you just want to leave enough space between you and the front and back so that you can put your head down to the ground. That's all you need to do. Great. And if anyone wants to come up on the stage, would you like to come up on this? You're not? That's okay. It's okay. So if there's anyone, there's room, anyone who wants to come up here, that's great. So we're going to be right here. We can have one more person. Come on over here. That's fantastic. Okay. Okay, are we all ready?
Yeah. Okay. We'll take a mic.
I will call for the prayer. It's not the prayer yet. But it will be later on. I will tell you when.
We'll just follow his lead. So he's going to do it the first time, and we're just going to simply follow his lead. So as he goes, we'll wait and we'll go second.
We just want to pick it up on the recording. She'll hold. She'll hold. You don't have to hold it.
No?
No.
You don't have to hold it.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله. أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله. حي على الصلاة.
أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله حي على الصلاة حي على الفلاح قد قامت الصلاة قد قامت الصلاة الله أكبر الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله. We pray صلاة المغرب. الله أكبر. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. قل هو الله أحد الله الصمد لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفؤا أحد. الله أكبر. سمع الله لمن حمده. الله أكبر. الله أكبر. الله أكبر. الله أكبر. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إنا أعطيناك الكوثر فصل لربك وانحر إن شانئك هو الأبتر. الله أكبر. سمع الله لمن حمده. الله أكبر. الله أكبر. الله أكبر. الله أكبر. Allah Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Sami'a Allahu liman hamida. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
May Allah accept our prayers. Thank you.
The bottom of my heart for participating in that. To me, that was the most beautiful prayer I have ever prayed in my life. I've prayed many times during Ramadan where I felt close to God, and I've prayed many times just, you know, in general, but today was probably the most special prayer that I've ever had in my entire life, and I cannot thank all of you enough. My God, you've warmed my heart like no tomorrow, so thank you so much for this.
Are there more questions? Yeah.
Praying and you should pray in a group, or is it straight Ethan? And then the other question is,
it's mandatory to do the prayer. If you do it individually, it's fine. But if you do it in a group, in congregation, then it's more reward. And someone may ask why. I don't know if you felt the energy we had praying together at the same time. And the more people, the more energy. And this is one of the benefits. It's not the only one. Now the second one, when we pray in group, we are careful. As everything we do in group, we are more careful than doing it individually. It is the same with the prayer. We watch out what we do, we watch out how we behave in prayer. So we have another benefit that we perform the prayer in a better way. And another commitment is that if you commit yourself to do it in congregation because you like it for these two first reasons, then you have a third benefit that comes from itself, which is doing it on time. Because what we did now, we did this at the beginning of the time of the prayer. And we may do it later on, like before 8:30. It will be still good. But it's like if someone gives you something, and you would like to thank him, you will not wait a year to thank him. He will accept it. It's fine. But if you do it soon, it's better. It's the same thing with prayer. The sooner we pray, the better it is. So the answer is yes, you can do it individually, but it's better to do it in congregation.
And the other half of the question is what you're reciting, is that on here?
Exactly. So, as I said, the prayer has some rules. And the set sequence of actions we did, from being standing till we prostrate, this one will be done the same way by every other imam. Every Muslim, he will pray the same way. He will recite the Fatiha, which we have on the paper. And this is a mandatory recite. We have to recite it mandatory. We cannot escape it. But the second part that I recite after Fatiha, after saying Amin, then I recite something else, some verses of the Quran. This you may choose whatever you want. And this is what makes a difference between a long prayer and a short and sweet prayer. Like the one we did, I took the shortest verses. By the way, they are chapters, so the shortest chapters in the Holy Book. Did I answer your questions? Yeah?
Thank you. I had a question. It says 17 times, and you mentioned sometimes you prostrate 4 times, and sometimes twice, and sometimes once. Could you explain why you do that?
Thank you for asking. So, as I said, we have the optional prayer. In the optional prayer, we will go as we like. We can do 2 sets of sequence, 4, it's always a pyramid. It has to be a multiple of 2, like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, so on. You can do whatever you want. But when we come to the prescribed prayer, as I said earlier, there are rules, and we have to follow them. Sometimes we have explanation to what we do, but not always we have explanation. So, if you ask me why we don't drink alcohol, I can give you a scientific explanation, but it's not the reason. The scientific is that you have more alcohol in your blood, you pass a level, it will do bad to you in many ways. But this is not the reason why we don't drink alcohol. We don't drink alcohol because in the set of teachings we learn is to not drink alcohol. And in the set of teachings it is to do it that way. And we do it that way. Thank you.
In one point of the prayer, you said a prayer to the right, like you whispered something to the right and then to the left, and I wondered if you could tell us the significance of that.
Thank you. In our belief, every human is accompanied by 2 angels. On his right and on his left. One on the right is writing down all your good deeds. And I guess you know what the other one is. So this is why we greet them. Because what I said is Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah means peace be upon you. Peace and mercy of Allah be upon you. Peace and mercy. So we are kind to them.
The way in which you spoke the words in the beginning was like a song, and I was wondering if that is also, that melody is the same across the Muslim faith, and if not, where that comes from and how it's created and what role that plays on the impact it has in the prayer.
Thank you. So, the question is important because sometimes I didn't explain all what we did, and I think it's the best way we do it now, like answering questions, because if I can spend hours explaining all details. So we go with this detail, which is an important one. Did I have to sing it? Maybe not.
I can't just say Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. And it's fine, it's accepted. No, but as a human, we need it to done in a nicely way. And we do it in that nice way. And we, for the adhan, it's not the same. Not everybody will do it the same way. There are many ways. If you go to Google, put adhan, you can make some audio, you can listen, it's different. But we have to say the same words. Now, coming to the Quran, which I recite when I was doing the prayer, this is a teaching of our Prophet. It's Quran to us, it's a very important book, and the words we recite are very important to our heart. So we try to say them in a beautiful way. Is it valid, your prayer without this? Yes. Is it more beautiful? I'll let you answer this question. Thank you.
It's cultural. Were you taught that? I think it's absolutely beautiful. I'm wondering, were you taught to sing it that way in particular, or have you created that for your own practice, for example?
Yeah, the question is, what I did, is it my way, or is it something I learned from someone else? Yeah. Islam came 1400 years before, and there were many improvements in the way this azan, what we call azan, has been done, and we record only the most beautiful one. So this is my way because it fits my voice. You will find a beautiful way. I'm not saying you mine is the best. No, there are many ways of calling for the prayer. It depends on the voice, it depends on which one you like. But we don't go outside a tradition. We can. No one will blame you. But we go, we learned it this way, we do it. When we start as Muazzin, we are young. So we are happy if the scholar is happy with us. So which way we're going to do it? The way of our scholar, and so on. So, but can we do it another way? Yeah, why not? Why not? The singing, the way we said Quran, this one, this is something has to be taught. You cannot just do it because when we pronounce Arabic, at many spelling, if they are misspelled, they give wrong meaning. And this is something we have as Muslims to be careful with. And this is why to read Quran, which is the holy book, has to be done properly. And the best way to do it is to learn it from someone who does it well. So we read properly, and if we would like to do it in congregation, we ask always like someone to watch us if we do it good, and then we start doing it otherwise. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Thank you. Any questions? So I thank all of you and really appreciate your time. I felt very good when we did the prayer together. It gave me more energy, and this is something I will bring with me back to Montreal, a good experience, and I hope to meet you again peacefully and for peace.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
I just want to tell you a brief story so we all are on the same page and teach you one of your parts for the kirtan. Okay, so about a year ago, Geshe-la took some of us to Morocco to the Fez festival, and it was a really beautiful, incredible experience, and we saw all these very prepared performances in the daytime. And then late at night, you know, there was a group, about five of us, went for a walk, and we heard like this incredible kind of wild, beautiful music playing. And we kind of turned the corner from where all the the set up like professional performances were, and we found just kind of like a natural group of people chanting. And there was a stage kind of set up, and there was this beautiful like Muslim community who had gathered to chant that night. It was late at night, and there was a big kind of wild lady, you know, sitting in the front with like a couple missing teeth, and like she was just fantastic. She had this big harmonium, and she had this huge band with her, and she was chanting, you know, verses from the Quran. And I didn't know that you chanted the Quran. I thought that it was just too sacred. And you never chanted it. And then out in the audience were all these families, and they had like, you know, picnic baskets and like tablecloths, and they were just totally partying. And they were partying, they were just calling back to her, you know, the chants of the Quran. And then that was all the families were right up front. And then in the back row, which is where I was standing, were all of these young, gorgeous, like teenage boys, like Muslim teenage boys, and they were holding on to each other like they were in a soccer match that was winning, and they were just jumping up and down, like chanting, Allah, Allah. And we like turned the corner and we were like, this is the Fez Festival. Like this is the real thing that's going on. So we hung out there for like about an hour, and we're, you know, doing a small attempt to try and replicate the beauty that we saw that night. And there's one part of the chant where the big lady would call out Muhammad al-Razul, and then all the boys would yell back to her, Allah! Right? So that's one of your parts, okay? So the song is suddenly going to change tempo, like it'll be going along like a nice kirtan like you're all used to. And then the song is going to change tempo, and I'm going to say Muhammad al-Razul, and you're all going to yell out, Allah! Okay, so let's just practice. So I'll say, Muhammad al-Razul. Muhammad al-Razul. Okay, great. Rasul. Okay, Rasul. Please forgive my pronunciation. I promise I'm going to be better next time. I'll work on it. So, for those of you who don't know what a kirtan is, Geshe-la said, I will call out a phrase. I'll sing a phrase, like, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And you will then sing that back to me. So mainly for the whole of the chant, you're going to be repeating back what I say, except when we get to Muhammad al-Razul. And if everyone can just grab your sheet that was passed out to you. And the words, most of the words that we're going to be chanting should be there in case you get lost. But just listen and learn it. And it's a beautiful, this mic has come down. It's a beautiful prayer to learn. Okay, is everyone clear?
Yeah.
One last thing.
Sing it for peace in the world and the reconciliation of the Islamic and the other communities of the world. Okay, it's time to change and it's time to become good, close, dear friends. Okay, so sing it for that.
And sing with joy. Call out Allah's beautiful name with joy.
How do you hear from Turkey?
Morocco.
America? Okay, I'm going to do Fatiha and try. And then at the end when I go, you just go, Ameen. And pardon my nerves and emotion. I heard a blind man from Turkey. I had his tape. He was a big blind man from Turkey. and I listened to him as a when I was younger, and I fell in love with this one. I hope this is not too loud. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Irrahmanirrahim. Maliki Yawm Al-Din. Iyaka na'budu wa iyaka nasta'in. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. Sirat al-ladin an'amta alayhim ghayril maghdubi alayhim waladdallin. Amen.
Bismillah, irahman.
plant some seeds for peace in the future. At midnight, it turns into 9/11, the 10th anniversary of that historic date, and really a time for us to start to think about how we can create ways to move on and forgive and be at peace within ourselves and in the world. So in the spirit of that, we've invited these very special guests to come, and they spoke earlier and gave beautiful prayers. And now we're going to introduce Geshe Michael Roach, who some of you know, some of you might be new to know, but I'd like to introduce him. Basically, I was thinking, like, how could I encapsulate it? Well, in my mind, he's one of the most amazing, accomplished, and coolest people in the world. I mean, last night he played some bass, upright bass, you know, and sitar, and I just think there's so many different things. He's just a well-rounded, beautiful being, and his background is he has a Princeton grad. He's a Princeton grad, U.S. Presidential Gold Medal Scholar, first American in 600 years to achieve the prestigious degree of Geshe, the Master of Tibetan Buddhism in the monastery. He's an internationally acclaimed author of The Diamond Cutter, a bestseller in 20 languages. That book was based on his measurable success with Andean International, which grew to $250 million, which sold to Warren Buffett recently as a diamond business. He's also the founder of Diamond Cutter Institute, an organization that leads business retreats and talks around the world, as well as karmic management circles in 16 U.S. cities. He's also the founder of 6 yoga organizations, including the Yoga Studies Institute and Diamond Mountain University, where he's taught over 15 years of courses in yoga, Tibetan Buddhism, and business. A lot of those are free online. He's a philanthropist, a translator, also of Tibetan and Sanskrit scriptures. Over 10,000 pages he's already translated, and I bet there will be more. He founded the ACIP, Asian Classics Input Project, which saves classical texts, Tibetan Buddhist texts, yoga texts throughout the world, and helps bring a living to Tibetan refugee women and their children. He's the author of How Yoga Works, Essential Yoga Sutras, The Garden, The King of Dharma, and The Diamond Cutter. He's also an accomplished musician, as you can see. Sitar, bass, and bass. And he's also been trained in dance, classical dance, Indian dance, and ballet. Beautiful quality. Hey, wait. Was not His Holiness the first Panchen Lama a dancer? Yeah? So, okay. Anyway, all these things are just a snapshot of the person that you will meet tonight, and I have the pleasure to introduce you, Geshe Michael Roach.
Again, I would like to thank Sharif and Aisha. Just putting us in that. And I do hope you come back. We'll make some plans. So, the text we're studying, which we spoke about last night, I know some people weren't here last night, so I'll just review a little bit of what we talked about last night. The first Panchen Lama, the Panchen Lamas and the Dalai Lamas alternate. When the Dalai Lama gets older, the Panchen Lama gets born, and then he takes over for a while, and it alternates like that. So the first Panchen Lama, he lived about 400 years ago, and just an extraordinary person. One of the greatest poets of Tibet, certainly maybe one of the top three or four philosophers of Tibet. And it's interesting about war is that in Tibet there was a civil war started during his time. He was in retreat in a cave, and
the two armies approached each other nearby, and he felt them, and that a war was about to break out. So he got up, and he walked out, and he stood between the two armies. And he said, if you're going to fight, you have to kill me first. So he was a very respected Lama of Tibet at that time. It's like the Dalai Lama nowadays. So then he said, if you want to fight, you have to kill me first. And then no one wanted to kill him. So they called off the war. You know, so that was the kind of person he was. Extraordinary man. So only a person like that could write a text like this. This text that you have, it's a poem, it's a long poem, you only have a small part. I was thinking it would take like one weekend, but it seems it's going to take a while. But it's a poem about an argument in one person's mind, okay? Between the devil and the angel. So I was thinking about what Charif said, the two angels, you know, it's sort of like that, you know? There's two people fighting over the territory of this person's soul, you know? And it's very beautiful, because only a great person, I think, would admit that they had the fight going on, you know? It's like Mother Teresa wrote about her doubts, right? So he's writing about the war that's going on inside of his own heart between forces of dark and forces of light, right? I think it's important to understand sometimes the devil in this text is called the tendency to think that things are themselves. Sometimes the devil is called in this text the tendency to think that things are themselves, okay? So why would that get to be the devil? Why do you get to be the devil because of that? And we talked about the pen last night. I always talk about the pen. I should pre-record it and just sit down. Many of you heard this. I won't go through the whole thing, but I can say, what is this thing? And then you'll say it's a pen. And then I'll say, if a dog came into the room and I waved this thing in front of the dog, then what will the dog do? Will the dog see a pen? And you say, no. And then I say, well, what would the dog do? And you say, the dog would chew it, right? Then I would ask, which one is right, the dog or the human? And you would say, well, you could say both of them are right, right? Animal rights, right? And both of them are correct. Then I would say, if I left this object on this chair, and all the people left the room, and all the dogs left the room, then which one would it be at that time?
Neither.
And you'd say neither, okay? And that's the Buddhist idea of emptiness, okay? So it doesn't mean anything else. It doesn't mean nothing matters. It doesn't mean you should stare at the wall. It doesn't mean you don't have to be nice to people. It doesn't mean any of those things. It means when you put this object on the chair, and there's nobody in the room, at that time, you can't say it's a pen, or something to chew, because there's no one seeing it, there's no one thinking of it as one or the other. Okay? At that time, it's just waiting to be either one. It's available to be either one. And that's, you could say, maybe emptiness is a bad word, I think available might be nice. It's just available to be either one. So then I asked you last night to hold up your right hand, right? You can get to this fast if you do it right. And I want you to show me, is the pen coming from the pen, or is the pen coming from me? Especially the kids have to show me. This way or this way? Yeah. Okay, great. Okay? It's coming, therefore it must be coming from me. Okay, the dog sees something completely different. The dog wants to chew on it. The dog doesn't want to write a poem or something. Okay? They don't see it as a pen. So it must be coming from me, and the chuta must be coming from the dog. Then we asked an important question last night. We said, if you close your eyes and you wish this was something else, would it become something else if it's coming from you? So we can try. You can say, I want a diamond as big as Geshe Michael's brain. He'll split the money with us all. You know, if you try real hard and you close your eyes and you wish, okay? And you know very well, you can wish all you want and it's not going to become a diamond. It is coming from you, but you can't make it become anything you want, okay? So it must be coming from you in some other way. It must be coming from you in some other way. How? We say there's a seed in your mind that opens in your mind when I hold this thing up. Okay, so you ready? Try to see if you can catch the seed. Okay? I'm going to pull it out of my hand, okay? You can't see it yet, right? I'm going to pull it out of my hand. Try to imagine, in the moment that I pull it out of my hand, a seed cracks open inside your mind, and a tiny little picture of a pen flies from your mind to this thing. Ready? See if you can catch it, okay? You gotta be fast. You ready? Kids can probably do it. You ready? Go. It's too slow. Okay? Okay, I'll try again. Try to feel it, okay? By the way, who decides the timing? That's karma, okay? You might look away at the moment I pull it out, okay? Ready? I'm gonna pull out an object. I want you to tell me what it is. And in that second, a seed cracks open in your mind, karmic seed, and a picture of a pen flies out to the thing. Okay, it's not that you're seeing things towards you; it's that things are flying out of your mind, and you know a nice pen picture goes, and then it's a pen. You see what I mean? And it's not a pen until it does. Okay, it's not a pen until that flies out. Which got us to the question last night, is a pen all the parts of a pen? You could say no. Why? Because the same parts, when looked at by a dog, are something to chew. And the same parts, when looked at by a human, are something to write with. Therefore, the pen cannot be in the pen. Okay? You gotta get comfortable with that. You're not comfortable at all, but it's okay. You can take all the parts of a pen, and there still won't be a pen. Okay? Until you think of it as a pen. Okay? There's no pen in the parts of the pen. Okay? Then you've got, if you're teaching this, okay, everybody here should become a teacher. Everybody here should teach this in some way. Okay? And many people here are teaching many hundreds of people. But when you teach it, in the next moment, you must ask the question, what has this got to do with my life? Okay, that's cute, Geshe Michael. You know, the pen's coming from me, you know. Then what? And I think a lot of teachings that I've ever gone to, Buddhist teachings, they never answered this question. You know, they just stopped there. They said, okay, have refreshments. The parts of the pen are not the pen. You know, your parts are not you. Good night. You know, and then what do I do with that? I felt very uncomfortable when I was taught in India this thing, and they left me like that. And I'm like, what? Is there no pens? Is there no, am I not here? You know, I felt very uncomfortable. It felt very, it felt like giving somebody half of a meal, you know? And I'm like, what's the other half? You know? And that's the big thing. Last night we talked about, we had an example. Who was it? Your husband. Okay? You cooked from Julia Child, page 265. I can't even tell you. You cooked beef bourguignon for your husband. You spent like four hours. Not counting the shopping time, which is a good 4 hours. No, where I live, because I have to drive in 45 minutes this way. So, you spent a lot of time cooking beef bourguignon. You came home and you offered it to, you know, your husband came home from work and you said, you know, here you go, honey. You know, you present it with a flourish, you know, and he says, well, me and the guys were thinking of having Domino's pizza and watching the game tonight, you know. And it just blows off without any consideration for your feelings. No clue about your feelings. He just says, oh, I was thinking of having a Domino's pizza tonight. And watch the game with the guys, you know. And then he invites his friends over and they eat this pizza, right? Then we were asking the question, so I mean, that's a stupid husband, okay? We can agree. That's a stupid husband. Is the stupid husband in the parts of this of the husband?
No.
His arms, his legs, his mind, his intentions, his feelings, all of him together, his name, his identity, lump all that together, is that your stupid husband. We have to say no, okay? In this teaching, the devil says, that's your husband, okay? The arms, the legs, the nose, the words, the stupidness, all together, that's your husband. The devil is trying to convince you that that's your husband, okay? And the angel's like, no, no, that's not your husband yet. Because there's one thing missing. You have to think of him as the stupid husband. Then he's a real stupid husband. Okay? Just like the pen. Okay? The parts of the pen, without someone to think of them a certain way, are not a pen. Because they could have been a chitra, because we heard it's available. Right? By itself. Husband also, he's just available. He could have been anything. Okay? He could be smart, he could be stupid. Okay? Who's filling in the last part? From your mind. Okay? From your mind. Why? There's a seed in your mind. Who put the seed there? How do you put the seed for a pen? You ready? You gotta hold your hand up. Higher. Like this. So we're gonna demonstrate. Chi and me. Okay? Okay, we gotta get this, you know. Okay. I'm gonna show you how to plant a seed for the pen. Ready? He needs a pen. He's gonna write a novel. And then, I, with a good heart, with love for him, and want to help him, I let go. In the second, in the millisecond that I let go, that seed is planted in my subconscious. Okay? That's karma. If you can call it karma, I don't like the word karma. It's too weird. You know, you can call it a seed. The moment I let go, a seed is planted in my mind. Okay. Then, a week later, I go to some talk at Monte Lucia, and this guy goes, and then that seed goes, boom. Okay, I can't do that again, okay? It comes, it grows, and it comes out of you, okay? So if you want a pen, how do you get a pen? Yeah, you don't buy, okay? The devil wants you to think that the way you get a pen is to pay money. Okay? And that's just, think about it for 2 seconds, okay? Have you ever gone to the store with money and not able to buy a thing? Yeah, they're out of pens. This is a weird pen. This is hard to get, these pens. This is from Japan or something, okay? They're hard. I love them. Sometimes you go and they say, we don't have any. I say, I have money. The money is the cost of a pen. We don't have any. Ah. Money is not how you get a pen. Okay? Sometimes you don't have any money and someone gives you a look. A Japanese pen. You see what I mean? Money isn't how you get a pen, alright? You get a pen by
giving.
You must give a pen. There's no other way to get a pen. No pen ever came without giving a pen first. There's no such thing. No dollar of the $60 trillion of the planet's economy ever came unless someone gave money to someone before. It cannot. Okay? The value of the world's money, the combined value of all the currencies of the world, $60 trillion, not $1 exists unless someone gave a dollar to someone else. Okay? You gotta grasp that. I'm not saying some of the money comes from your seeds. All of the money, all the world's economy comes from your seeds. Okay? Did the number of dollars in the world suddenly drop 18 months ago? No, I mean the big pieces of paper or whatever. It didn't drop like 20% in one day. I mean, it doesn't do that. The papers are there. People are not going to like drop them and, you know, where's my money, you know? The value of the world's economy dropped. Like that. Not the number of pieces of paper. The value, the wealth of the planet dropped suddenly. Within a few weeks, okay? How can you do that? The papers didn't get less. You see, the notes didn't get less. It's a seed. The seed changed. In all of the people who used that money, their seeds changed. And that's why money can radically change in a few weeks. The total value of the world's economy can change in a few weeks. That's how. It's perceptual. It's not the number of pieces of paper. It didn't change. The amount of property, the number of cars, nothing changed. It was just a perception. And then suddenly there's less money in the world. All right? So if you want money, what do you have to do? You must give money. There's no choice. If you want money, you must give money. In controlled way. Con tecnica. We were in Guadalajara last week. Con tecnica. We were in Ukraine the week before. Sa technikikam. And you must know the
technique.
You must have the technique. Okay? There's a technique. Maybe we'll talk about it tonight. That's probably I have to. Now, question. If you want to see the parts of your husband as being completely insensitive to you, how would you get that to happen? What kind of seed do you plant for that? What do you have to do to get an insensitive husband? You must be insensitive. You must be insensitive. Okay? It's interesting. It goes both ways, good things and bad things. If you want to have a husband who would rather order Domino's than eat Julia Child's beef bourguignon without even tasting it, you know, then you've got to be insensitive before that, because it's the cause. Okay? You have to plant the seed before that. Okay? If you want a big watermelon, do you have to plant a big watermelon? No. In Guadalajara, they say sandia. In China, we say xigua. Every country has watermelon. Okay? We gave this talk in Hamburg, and then a guy came up to me afterwards. He said, I'm the watermelon king of Europe. How did you know? You know, I didn't know. He says, I can send you 18 trucks. You know what I mean? You know, so the seed for a watermelon is tiny. Okay, the seed for a watermelon is tiny. The watermelon is fat and big. And inside the watermelon, there's hundreds more seeds. Okay? So, big question for you. To get an incredibly insensitive husband, do you have to be incredibly insensitive?
No.
You just have to be sort of insensitive. Okay? I'm just training you how, in case you want to change your husband into, you know, an insensitive person. I'm just giving you clues, okay? You just have to be a little insensitive on a regular basis, okay? Like, be, and by the way, it doesn't have to be to your husband, okay? You can plant a seed at work, and the watermelon will come out at home in front of Monday night football, okay? All right? Got it? Okay, that's interesting, okay? For good things and bad things, the seed is small. You just need to plant a small seed. Okay, so we did that last night. We talked about that last night. Your husband's body is not an irritating husband until you're irritating to someone else last week, and that seed will cause him to say to you, I was thinking about how... What's that Domino's with the guys? You see? What's that? Where's that put the feeling of being upset at him? What's that do to the feeling that of being angry or upset with him? If you realize he's flowing from you, then what would happen to the feeling of upset at him? Okay, I gotta tell you a story quick because we don't have much time tonight. So this woman goes into the shower. It's. I always think of New Jersey. I lived in New Jersey for a while, the armpit of the nation. And, they call it that, and it's true. It's cold. It's always cold. I hated it there. I grew up here. Everything was cold all the time. And then you put socks on, and usually you have one good pair of wool socks, right? And then you go into the take a shower, and suddenly you feel cold water seeping out through your only pair of wool socks, you know. And somebody took a shower and left the shower curtain open, and there's some cold water all over the floor. And then you can't dry those socks in New Jersey. Nothing ever dries in New Jersey. And Okay, and then you're like that, you know? Then you go to your friends, you know, you go to the other, in my case, maybe you go to the monks, right? You go to the other monks and you say, they're having breakfast, and you confront them. Because that's what you're supposed to do, right? That's what we are, the devil trained you to confront people who cause you trouble, right? So you go to the other monks, you sit down at the table, they're drinking their salt butter tea, you know, and then you're like, all right, who took a shower this morning, you know? And everybody's like, you know, I didn't take a shower this morning. Did you take a shower this morning? No, I didn't take a shower this morning. And then they're like, then somebody, and you start to get angry, you know, you're like, somebody tell me who took a shower this morning. And then somebody says, you know, didn't you get up early for praying before dawn? We do it sometimes, but not enough. I'm going to try. Didn't you get up before dawn to pray? Oh, yeah. Did you take a shower? Then you're like, oh, yeah, I took a shower. So you didn't close the shower curtain? I guess not. So you got your own socks wet. Then you're blaming us, right? And then how do you feel at that moment? They call sheepish in English, right? Sheepish in English. It starts to sound like Anton's yoga class. Anyway, I don't know how you do, what do you call that? Rap, while you're teaching automatically. How it comes out as rap, it's a miracle. I don't know how. But it's really beautiful. Okay, so like you're, how do you feel at the moment that you figured out it was you who got your socks wet? You see? That's how you feel about your husband when you study this stuff. Then life changes, okay? Life drastically changes. You can't blame anybody. Nobody. Okay? For anything. Big stuff too, like wars and all that stuff. Politicians, it's all coming from you. Okay? It's very profound. Okay? But that's good news because then you can change things. Okay? They're coming from you and you can change them. They are not in their parts. A war is not in the two armies. It's in the minds of the people. And your husband's not in his arms and legs. He's flowing. He's flowing from you. Okay? So that's a summary about last night. Okay? We're going deeper, you know? And I learned something when I started teaching. I was afraid, oh, there's a lot of new people here. Maybe I shouldn't get too complicated, or I shouldn't go very deep because they'll get lost and they won't come back again. But what I've learned is that if you challenge people and you tell them the truth, the hard truth, the deeper things, they really appreciate it. Like you've been dying to hear something deeper because all you got was television and movies and, you know, you're dying to hear something a little bit more deep. So I'm just going to jump, okay? We're just jumping, all right? We're on verse 60. Page 6, okay? I'll read the Tibetan for good luck. It's a custom. Semki ke jik na chi mi ke mi ke kyan de la mi de ta ke. Anybody doesn't have a book there? Raise your hand. They'll come give you one. Okay, keep your hand up or they will don't know who you are. Okay. Semki ke jik na chi mi ke mi ke kyan de la mi Vedan kechik na chitan, di kechik na chitan. Thama dhute kechik me, kechik na chitan jukyan. Kimin kyukyan denami. Okay, it's poetry. Keep your hand up if you need one, okay? He covered your husband's body. Now he's going to question your husband's mind such as it is. Okay? He's gonna, is your husband his mind? He's not in his body. Does he have a body? Does your husband have a body? Yeah. Is your husband standing there holding a pizza box? Yes. Okay, I'm not saying he's not there, okay? Don't get me wrong, okay? Is he in his body? Is he in the parts of his body without you thinking of him a certain way? No, there's nothing there, okay? Put this thing on the chair, everybody walks out, there's no pen there. It's just waiting to be something. Your husband, before you got home, sitting with his pizza box, He wasn't insensitive yet. Okay? It takes you to walk in and your seat opens and you see this guy and then suddenly you label him insensitive. Then he becomes insensitive. And he really is insensitive. Okay? I'm not saying he's make-believe. He's coming from your mind, therefore he's real. In this system, he's coming from your mind, and therefore he's real. Okay? You are naming his parts insensitive. And he is insensitive because you named him. Okay? Did you have a choice?
Yes.
No, the seat opens, that's it. You don't have a choice. Okay, I could do this 50 times. You're going to see a pen each time. You don't have a choice. You have seeds in your mind. You have a choice about what you see next week. Okay? You have a choice about what you see next week. Give away a few diamonds, maybe next week. It'll be a diamond. Got it? Because it's nothing by itself. Okay? Got it? So we covered all that. I'm trying to get to the cool part. What about his mind? Okay. What about his mind? His body I can handle. You know? The appearance of him. I call him something. I think of him as something. But what about his mind? The body parts are in one moment of time. The mind parts are in a flow the whole day. The mind, if you want to say what are the parts of the mind consists of a whole series. Sharif was talking about the sequence of the prayer, and I liked it. It's a sequence of the prayer, the parts of the prayer, okay? Over time, over the 20 minutes that we did the prayer, there was a sequence from beginning to end, okay? Your husband's mind is a sequence of moments of perception from the morning to the evening. And that's his mind. And those are the parts of his mind. Okay, got it? The moments. And then don't think of them as, some mental stuff. Think of it as, he saw the mirror. He saw the razor. He saw the shaving cream. He saw his hand go to the shaving cream. He saw the shaving cream come out of the can. See, he's shaving. You see? Don't think of his mind as some clear, ineffable thing. It's made up of parts of a movie. He's seeing the can. He's seeing the razor. He's picking up the razor. And those are all moments of his mind. He's watching his body move. And he's watching the world around him. And each thought is filled with something. Got it? Each thought has content. Each moment of his mind has content. There's some kind of picture in the mirror. His mind is like a mirror. And there's content in the mind at each moment. Got it? Your mind is made of moments. So when you discuss whether the mind is the mind, you got to look at its parts. And the parts of the mind go from morning to night. Unlike your body. The body, you could say, Anton at 9:05 and 38 seconds. What are his parts? You can discuss the body that way. But the mind is a series of santana. They call, Carlos Santana didn't make up the word. In Sanskrit, santana means the flow of instant. Okay? And he's a santana. Your husband's mind is a santana. It's made of parts. Okay? Now we can go back to what we learned yesterday. Can you find your husband in any one of those moments of his mind? Is your husband the perception of the shaving cream at 7:43 and 28 seconds? Is he any one moment of his mind? He's not. He's got all the other stuff. There's the pizza incident. Right? No, that's also your husband. So he's not any... It's like saying you are your arm or something like that. You're not your arm. You're all your parts together. Right? Is your husband any one moment in his day? No. He's all the moments in his day. Got it? His mind, your husband's mind, is all the moments of his mind in that day. Together. Right? Just the way the pen is all the parts of the pen together. Am I right? Yeah, I tricked you. Come on. Is the pen all the parts of the pen together?
No.
No, put the same parts together, show it to your dog, he'll chew on it, okay? The pen is not all the parts of the pen together, right? Is your husband's mind, all the moments of his mind, from morning to night, together?
No.
No. Not until you think of it a certain way. Okay? Not until you think of it a certain way. Okay? How are we thinking of his mind? What are we thinking about his state of mind during the pizza incident? What are we saying about his state of mind? It's insensitive. It's incredibly insensitive. Okay? It's extraordinarily insensitive. You know? You spend 3 hours shopping, then Brick Bourguignon takes time. Right? It's got to sit in there. And he's blowing off 5 hours of your work in a single sentence. I'll stick me in the garden and stick it around the corner. And then he just turns around and goes to watch the game. You see what I mean? Who created his mind? Who created his state of mind? Okay? Who created his state of mind? You see? His emotions, his feelings, the way he thinks. Where's it coming from? Me. It's also coming from me. The body is easy to think about. You know, his manner with the pizza box. You know? But then, his thinking. You're also blaming me for his thinking? Yes. Alright? The way he thinks is also coming from me. You gotta, if you can break a thing into parts, then the thing you broke into parts must be coming from you. That's all. If the thing has parts, if the thing is made of parts, somebody's gotta be tying those parts together. Okay? They didn't jump together. Okay? And the only one doing it is you. Right? How about, I'll push a little harder. Okay, I lost half of you, then I'll see if I can raise the other half. I'll push a little harder. For him, where is his mind coming from? He, from him, okay? From his seats, right? How does he... How does your husband see his state of mind? Reasonable. Okay? Reasonable. He works hard. He only sees his friend once a week. You know? He ordered the pizza before you got home. You didn't tell him you were making the bourguignon. You know? You did this 18 times before. You know? He was being polite before. You know? And he ate the beef bourguignon and didn't get to see the game. And today he's put his foot down. Be reasonable, honey. You know, at least call me at work and tell me you're working on beef bourguignon. If you don't call me, and I order at Domino's, and my friends are already coming over, I mean, we've been through this before, okay? He's perceiving that same object. He's perceiving the same parts in a totally different way. He sees them as reasonable. He sees his own mind as, he's experiencing his own mind as reasonable. Got it? And you're experiencing his mind as incredibly insensitive, all right? Who's right, the dog or the human?
Both.
Okay? Whose fault is it if a dog sees something to chew on? It's the dog's fault. By the way, you want to go deeper? You want to jump a little bit? I'll take you for a 10-second deeper. Okay? To look at this and want to chew is what makes you a dog. Okay? Seed opening in your mind, and you look at, I pull out this thing, and you salivate, you is a dog. No, I'm not kidding. No, I'm trying to tell you something very serious. The seed in your mind, to see this as a pen, lasts 1/65th of a second. A discrete act of giving a pen, the seed created, it ends in 1/65th of a second. Okay? And the next perception of this could be anything. Then you're doing down dog because you're a dog. Okay, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. I mean, people ask me about rebirth. Did you think they were making dog bodies out in Kansas and somebody catches your spirit and shoves it into a dog body and closes the top real fast. You know, I mean, you think like that, right? It's not that. You could be in a different realm in 10 minutes. You get in your car, you have an accident. The seats have changed. Then you perceive your, you perceive a whole different world. You don't see this world anymore. You might want to tune it. Then you is a dog. Okay? No, it's very serious. I mean, I'm telling you what happens if you get in a car accident tonight. Okay? It's things, you're in a different, you're, the world's coming from you, and it can change in a 65th of a second. You can be in a different world. You can be a dog. In this room, you can be a dog. It's very, I wasn't talking about that tonight. You want to go deeper? You ready? Or you want like to just, like, it's like his class, you know, he's like, you guys want to really, I'm like, let me see. You guys want to do hands? Like, let me say yes. Let me say yes. And somebody always says yes. The first Panchen Lama, he doesn't even give you a whole verse to freak you out. He does it in the same verse. You are not the end of any one moment, and you are not the start of that time either. Okay? Now he gets into something different. Okay? You ready? You really want to do it? Handstand? One arm handstand? Okay. At least in my imagination, okay? What about time? What about the passage of time? Is that also coming from you? Yeah, okay, by the way, you're always safe to say 100%. You know, if I ask you a question and you're sleeping, you didn't hear what I was talking about, you can just say time. Okay, he says, you see, why does he get into time? He was talking about moments of your husband's day, right? He was talking about moments of your husband's day. We said your husband got up, bleary-eyed, walked into the bathroom, opened his eyes slowly, and saw his Gillette razor on the sink, right? Then that picture of a Gillette razor in the sink fills his mind. It fills the mirror of his mind, you see? There's content to the mind. Okay? There's a picture of a razor and a sink in his mind. Okay? How long does that picture last? It moves, right? It moves at the speed of life. Okay? Somebody told me, correct me if I'm wrong, somebody told me that a good high-quality film moves at 32 frames? Or something like that, 40 frames? Call it 40 frames a second. Okay? And then, 70? 24. Okay, 24. Then when you're on the internet and it's going like this, it means it's less frames per second. It's like down to 20, 10 or something. And it looks jerky. It looks, you know, it looks not quite right, okay? Life goes at 65 frames a second. 65 seeds ripen in your mind a second. You ready? Watch. Okay, 65 seeds ripen in your mind. Okay, that's 65 still images. Okay, so there we can't catch it, right? But there must be one here, and then there was one here, and then there was one here, and then there was one here. A karmic seed in your mind opened at the speed of 1/65 of a second. That's how it works. Okay. So your husband's mind. Okay, I promise you refreshments after this, okay? I promise. Just hang in there. Because I can just skip it, I can go to the easy parts. But that's not our tradition. We're the Dalai Lama's tradition. And the first Dalai Lama's teaching was Tsongkhapa. And he's my hero. And he never skipped anything. He went to the hard parts and skipped the easy parts. Okay, so here we go. Your husband's day consisted of however many seconds his day consisted of, times 65, right? Am I right? Just suppose. Okay? Times 65. Discrete pictures in his mind. So let's say he like me, I don't know about your husband, but I walk in the bathroom, my eyes closed, you know? And then I feel the sink. And then I'm like, okay, ready? Geshe Michael? Yeah, okay. You know, I open my eyes. I get out of bed, I don't open my eyes or anything. Oh, yeah, there's the razor. You know? How long did the first moment of seeing the razor last? 1/60th of a second. One frame. Mental frame. I'm talking, your mind is filled with images, okay? There was a frame, the first dump, and then boom. And there was one frame, and there was a razor, and there was a sink. Got it? Let's talk about that 1/60th of a second. Got it? Let's call it a microsecond or something, just for convenience, okay? The human mind cannot perceive a shorter amount of time. Okay? It's not possible. The human mind cannot register a 1/66th of a second. Okay? That's the limits of human perception. In Buddhism, okay? I think it's probably correct anyway. You cannot perceive a change in less than a 1/65th of a second. You can't register it. The human mind and the human eye cannot detect the difference. Okay? If it goes faster than that, okay? You cannot detect the difference. Alright? Now I'm going to ask you a different question, okay? You still get refreshments, don't worry, even if you answer wrong. Could you build a wall out of bricks that were too small to touch? With your hands? I mean, you can't. You see, if the brick was too small to pick up, you couldn't accumulate those bricks. I'm trying to give you that feeling, okay? When you build a wall, you need many bricks. And you put them down one by one. And it's not like you have a wall in 5 minutes. You keep laying down bricks and then finally there's an 8-foot wall. Right? They are accumulations of digestible blocks. They're big enough to handle and to put the cement. They're not like 12 feet long and they're not like 2 inches long because that would take you like a zillion years to finish a wall. They're convenient size for the human hand. And you build a wall by putting them up. Okay? How do you build a day in your mind? 1/65th of a second. You accumulate them. You pile them up. Okay? Otherwise, you wouldn't have a day. Okay? You add up moments of your day in your mind, and we say that's your mind over Wednesday. From Wednesday morning to Wednesday night, that's your mind. Got it? Don't leave me yet, okay? I promise you'll have refreshments. But if the moment were too small to perceive, could you build days out of that? You can't. You cannot. Okay? Because you wouldn't know where they were, and you know, could you go give me a handful of those bricks that are too small to pick up? And you're like, where are they? You know, and they're like, over there, and you're like, I can't see them. You know, and, okay? If it were too short, you couldn't accumulate it. Got it? You couldn't make big days out of moments that were too small. Because you can't perceive them. Got it? Okay. Next question for you. Are you ready? In the time that Geshe Michael opened his eyes, the 1/65th of a second, and saw his razor for the first time, that moment, was there a front end of that moment and a back end of that moment? Careful. Is there a start of that moment and is there an end of that moment? And is the start of the moment at the same moment at the end of the moment? No. Cannot be. Okay? Cannot be. The start of that moment can't be happening at the same time as the end of that moment. Or there wouldn't be any time between them. You know? Like, start to brush your teeth and finish brushing your teeth. If they happen at the same millisecond, you didn't brush your teeth. Okay, am I okay? You alright with me? Okay? There must be a front end of the smallest moment, and there must be a back end of the smallest moment. Are we okay? Just nod your head if you're not sure, because otherwise you'll never get refreshments. There must be a earlier part of that moment, and there must be a later part of that moment. Otherwise the moment wouldn't have any duration. It wouldn't be... If my right side was the same place as my left side, you couldn't see me. This is the beginning of the moment. This is the ending of the moment. It's got to have width. Okay? It's got to. Okay? Can you perceive it?
Yeah.
You cannot. Because that's a piece of this month's moment. And you can't see less than this month's moment. Got it? How can you see Geshe Michael's tummy if you can't see the left side of his tummy and the right side of his tummy? You answer me that and you got refreshments. That's all. He got it. He's your savior. Okay? He just did this. He didn't know what I said. Unless you see the left and the right. It's not possible. You cannot perceive a moment of time unless you see the beginning of it and the end of it. But that's too small a time for you to see. The bottom line, you cannot be seeing what you think. Time cannot be passing. Time itself does not exist in the parts of time. Time itself does not exist in the parts of time. If you perceive time passing, it's got to be a picture in your head. It's not passing. Out there, it's not passing. What's the proof of that statement? The dentist and the high school girlfriend. Okay, so I was at a drive-in. I don't know where the drive-ins are. I moved back to Phoenix hoping for drive-ins. And they're not here anymore. Yeah, you gotta give me the address, okay? But I don't know, when I was in high school, we took girls out to the drive-ins. They start the movie and then you duck. And then you do your thing, you know? And then, it was just kissing, okay? And then, then you hear this banging on the window and you're like, yeah, you can. And then everybody's like, you know. And then there's this big security guard, you know, and he's got a flashlight in his hand. And you look around, and there's no other cars. Hundreds of cars at once. You know, and you're like, he's like, kids, you know, it's like 2 a.m. The place has been closed for 2 hours, you know. Everybody drove, 100 cars drove past here. We didn't hear anything. You know? And then you're like, ding, you know, my parents are going to kill me. You know? Your dad's waiting up at the door. He's waiting, her dad was waiting at the window. You drive up and he's looking through the window, you know. And then you go to the dentist, right? I was at the dentist the other day. He said, gee, you travel a lot. I said, yeah. And he said, well, maybe I ought to do all your teeth at once. And I'm like, yeah, just go for it, man, you know. And he's like, phew, 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 phew. You know, and he did 6 cavities in one day, you know. And it was only an hour, according to him. And I got up and I went to the receptionist and I said, you know, how, you know, what are you going to hit me for? And she said, it's just, you know, an hour. And I said, no, I was in for like 3 hours. And she said, no, you were in for an hour. You know, and I said, no, he did all, you know, and she said, look at the clock, you know. So time itself is coming from you. Why is that important? Aging. Okay? You can contact Mika. You can affect the aging of your body. You see, we believe. I like Islam. When I studied in Fez, I actually studied in Zoo. Okay, you know near Marrakech, in the Atlas Mountains. So I studied their Quran, and I really liked it because they're always talking about angels. You know, so much talk about angels. They love angels. They're always talking about angels. And in our belief, it's the same. You know, Buddhists also have angels. You know? But we have an interesting belief. We believe that all people will become an angel. All people's bodies will stop aging. If when they get to enough study and enough prayer and, you know, enough clean your heart, then your body must change. to light. And yoga is supposed to speed it up. The purpose of yoga is to speed up that process, to change the channels, you know, of the body turning into light itself. And that's cool because you can help millions of people at the same time. Okay? When your body changes, you have the ability to help millions of people at the same time. The goal of all this talk, the goal of all yoga, the goal of all meditation and prayer is to change the body into light and end the aging process. And at the same time you learn to manipulate time itself. And you don't have to die. And you can serve people forever. Okay? Why? Tell me that and I'll promise you refreshments. Alright? Time itself is coming from you. Okay? It's adjustable. All things are adjustable. You can be a stupid monk with no business experience and make $250 million. And sell the company to Warren Buffett in your free time. You just make seeds and you just adjust them. You see? You can change time. You can change the passage of time and you can change your body. And that's the goal. Then you serve people. You use that body, you get a light body, and you serve people. And that's all we have to do. Okay? All right, have some nice. I'll stay here if you have questions. And then, what's the time?
8:41.
8:41? Okay, so let's start again at 9, okay? Let's start in 15 minutes. There's lots of refreshments. And hang on one sec. Don't get Yeti on me. You know what they say in the airplane? Please sit down. I have to make. Do I have to do it? Will you do it? I can't even read this. We're having a retreat January. Okay, we're going to cruise through. The rest of the stuff is not very difficult. You got the hardest stuff already. Do you have a homework, Nicole? Nicole, you have a homework?
Yeah.
Homework?
Yeah.
Otherwise, I can't. If you weren't here last night, if you feel like it, you can do homework. You can get certified to teach these weird things. We have online courses, I don't know what, 20,000 pages of Tibetan translations online for free. And you can learn to take those courses. So we'll put out some. Did they get a schedule on this? Yeah. There's a schedule in your notebook. It has the websites on it. Okay. Now a part comes. I'll read it to you. Now everyone, the angel is talking to the devil. Now everyone can see the game that you've been playing. Could you close the door? Thank you. The illusion now is torn. The root of the mind is ripped. The poison tree is felled. The king of every negativity that exists within a person is laid to rest now in his grave. The root of every evil has finally been severed. Okay? What's he talking about? Okay? The root of every evil has finally been severed. Right? Then there's the root of evil and there's evil itself. Okay, what is evil? In this system, evil is, you can say aging and death, right? I mean, there's wars, and there's hunger, and there's poverty. But however much money you have, and however much food you have, you die. You leave it all. You lose everything. People spend their lives to working to have a house and to build a family and to own things, right? And then they die. And in the monastery they have a joke. They come and they say, oh, such and such a monk died last night and now his stuff is looking for a new owner. You know what I mean? They're like, you want anything, go to his room, you know, they're giving his stuff away, you know. In the monastery you just give the monk stuff away, you know, so that your stuff will go looking for a new owner. And it's sad, you know? It's sad that all of the effort of a human life, even a successful human life, which is rare, is just blown away in the wind, right? There's nothing. You don't keep any of it. People start to justify it. They say, I'm working for my kids. I want my kids to have stuff. The house is for the kids, you know? Don't kid yourself. Alright? They will sell it in 2 years. And they will squander the money. Okay? You can work for 20 years, 25 years. They will blow the money in 2 to 3 years, really. And that's the end of the story. You're kidding yourself if you think they're gonna, you know, if you say I'm not working for myself because I know that's hopeless, I'm just working for my kids, but that's also hopeless. Okay? They're also gonna get old. We have to work on the bigger problem. Can you stop that fact on this planet? You see? Is it necessarily the case that people have to get old and die and lose all their things? You see what I mean? Do families have to be torn apart? By time. Okay? Like, forget the divorce rate and all that. Just time will tear you from the people you love. That's how it goes. You know? Is it possible to change those greater things? And the angel says, the root of evil is torn. You know? We caught your game. We understand your game now. And it's over. They say sharpa. Sharpa means it means this sound. In Tibetan, sharpa means you can tear reality. You can tear things. You don't have to live like this. The way this particular world is operating right now is a mistake. And it doesn't have to be that way. And you just have to fix it. And then there's no problems. Okay? How would you do that? You see, how can the angel claim that they've ripped out the root of every evil? Let's take an example of your husband. Okay? With the pizza. Okay? Because this is evil. Evil means you cook a nice meal and the guy doesn't want to eat it. That's bad. Okay? That's wrong. That's a wrongness. Okay? Can you fix it? You see? So I'll give you a question. Should you get tough with your husband? Should you demand that he eats the beef bourguignon and compliments you on it? Or should you just sit down and freeze it for next week? Which one should you do? What's the action you should take when your husband's unreasonable? Which is better? I'm giving you two options. Okay? Number one, fight with him. Insist that he eat it and enjoy himself. Secondly, just roll over and freeze it. And you might as well go to bed because he's going to be up watching the game. And you hate football. Which one?
It's true.
It does taste better than the day. This is the thing, you see, in this system, you don't have to talk to your husband, and neither action is correct. Okay? Neither action is correct. It's a bad, it's too bad choice. We had it in Mexico, dos malas opciones. They taught me it's two wrong choices. They're both wrong. They're both bad. Okay? What are you going to force him to enjoy it? You know? And he's just going to get angry at you. You know? Or are you going to like roll over and then he'll do it again next week? When you unfreeze it and have it ready, he's going to want, I don't know, a hot dog or something. You know? So, in this system, the game is over. The dos malas opciones game is finished. No more bad choices. Okay? Both courses of action are wrong. You see? All courses of action open to you are wrong. They're all bad. Because they don't work. Because they might not work. Did you get that? I'll say it again. They don't work because It might not work. If something doesn't work all the time, stop trying it. Okay? Don't buy a car that works on Tuesday and breaks on Thursday. Don't buy a car that only works 2 days a week. It's stupid. Right? But you continue to do things that only work sometimes. You insist on doing things that only work sometimes. No, no, I'm going to talk to my husband. You know? No, he says it doesn't. Stop insisting to do things that don't work. You know? Just do something that does work and let it go. Okay? What would work? In the case of the pizza husband.
If they called each other, 4 o'clock, what do you do at 5 o'clock?
Yeah. No, then he would call home and say he changed his mind. You see? What caused your husband to be insensitive? You were insensitive to somebody else. In Buddhism, there's this big thing about turning off the faucet. Just turn off the faucet. Don't stand there going, oh, look, water. You know? Just turn off the faucet, you know? How do you turn off the faucet? Stop being insensitive to other people. That's all. And that shuts him down. He will change within a week or two. It's very weird. People struggle all day. People struggle and hurt themselves and they're unhappy and they suffer and they have bad marriages and they live through years and years of a bad marriage. They're unhappy. I had a woman, she came to me recently. I said, she was all peppy and bright, you know, and she had a bad marriage. And I was like, what happened? You know, what's going on? You look 10 years younger and you're all peppy, you know. And she says, he died. And I'm like, I felt so horrible. You know, and she's a good person. You know, and I felt so bad. And people live for decades in a situation they don't like, and they don't want to be there, right? And the person is doing something, for the kids they stay, or something like that, you know, and they hate the whole situation and they don't want to be there, and they just stay there, because they can't think of anything else to do, you know. In this system, there's nothing you can't fix, you know. Just stop doing that thing yourself. It's very interesting. It's very cool. Okay, there's always bad choices, and then there's always one thing that works all the time. So just stop being insensitive to other people, and then that turns off the faucet. And then suddenly he's asking for beef bourguignon every night. Okay, then you gotta teach him to do dishes and stuff like that. That's also a seed. So then you rip out the root of evil. What is evil? Evil is being unhappy, right? Evil is sitting there unhappy year after year with somebody. That's evil. That's bad. You know? Just turn it off. Turn it off. What you don't like about the situation, stop doing it yourself. And it will change. Because it's flowing from you. Okay? Got it? That's why the angel can say, Now we've cut the root of all evil. Okay. Just realize things are coming from you. You can change anything. You can change anything. Any situation you can change. It's very cool. Can you imagine how frustrating it must be for the angel? Can you imagine how frustrating it must be for the angel to be surrounded by people who are unhappy? You know? And the angel's like, just do the opposite, you know. If your husband's insensitive, try to be more sensitive. If your husband criticizes you, stop criticizing other people. If your husband won't be affectionate to you, just smile at some people during the day, because that plants a small seed that makes him more affectionate. Okay? Then it gets too frisky and you have to plant the opposite seed. Okay? No, but you can adjust. You can adjust anything. What I mean is, all the unhappiness of life is unnecessary. It's a mistake. The tragedy of human existence is that all the unhappiness in our lives was unnecessary. It was just a boo-boo. You know, if you understood what the angel's saying about where things are coming from, everything could be changed. Your finances, your health, your relationships, it's all flowing from you. You just learn how to change it. And can you imagine what it would be like to be a person in a world of unhappy people knowing they could have been happy if they just knew a few things. You see what I mean? Because then they can have whatever they want. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And it's what makes it a tragedy is it's not necessary. You can have everything. You can have everything you want. You don't have to suffer. You don't have to have a husband who wants a pizza. Okay? I don't have anything else to say anyway. I guess we can do questions if you want. You have any questions? Yeah.
Yesterday you covered
Yesterday you covered the verse that said the opposite is also true.
Yeah.
Then I worked it out at home. It seems to say then that you could get an Anatole without having Anatole's parts, all of his parts, and you could have an Anatole without having any one particular one of his parts. So is there a way that you could have an Anatole without having all of his parts?
No. Okay, let's talk about the pen. There are parts. There is a black cylinder that has two parts. Those parts are there. And then your mind puts them together into a thing. You see what I mean? There is data there. There is Dara. There is stuff out there. And then there's the guy with a box. Okay? He's there. The parts are there. Then your mind names it, but involuntarily. You don't have control. A seed opens in your mind, and you see a selfish person. And you can't say, oh, that was just a seed in my mind, he's not selfish. He's selfish because you saw him as selfish. Okay? So, but before you named him selfish, before the picture came up in your mind of a pen, there were parts there. There was a black cylinder there. Okay? And you need all those parts. And then your mind declares what it is going to be, influenced by how you treated others.
Part. The opposite. What would the opposite?
Yeah. What's the opposite? When you're talking about the opposite, and you say it goes both ways, the Michael or the Anatole, who's not just those parts, that one is a thought. That one is a mental image. Just a mental image. You can see that. That one doesn't have the parts. Yeah. That's extremely difficult. And that's... Yeah, that's only a picture in your mind. What we're talking about is something that we talked about last night, and it's cruel to talk about it at 9:15. But I look down at my parts, right? And then I think, somebody asks me, are you all your parts together? And I say, no. Not until I think of me as me. Okay? Because these are all the parts, but the dog thinks of it differently. All the parts are there. But until the dog thinks of it as something to chew on, it's not something to chew on, right? So I look down at these parts. They're not Michael till I think of that as Michael. How do I... I'm checking to see if my parts are me. That means I must be looking at my parts and I must be thinking about me. Then I compare me to my parts. And I say, is me my parts? Okay? What he's talking about is more subtle. Is my parts me? Is my parts me? And to answer that question, you have to be able to make an image of me in your mind. and you are comparing that image to your parts. That image doesn't have parts yet. That's correct. That's just a picture in your head, which is about that big of Anatole, and it popped out of a seed in your mind.
So the part that never existed is the part he's talking about, right?
Not really.
You have the part that existed.
No, catch
this. The part
this.
That never existed. So yeah. You have the physical part of the pen, but could the part that never existed still exist in your own space without the parts?
Anatole asked me about an image of Michael in my mind. That exists. Okay. What is the thing that doesn't exist? Okay, we talked about a Michael who doesn't exist. Ready? Here's the Michael that doesn't exist. Why is it important to talk about the Michael who was never there? Because that gives you all your trouble. It's a source of all your trouble. He hurt me. He refused to take the big bourguignon. He hurt me. Then there's this big me. You see what I mean? That me, who was wronged by the husband, that me doesn't exist and never did. It never did. Why? That's a me who isn't to blame for the husband's behavior. Ready? Got that? The me who is not to blame for the behavior of people around me never existed, couldn't exist, was never there. And that's the me you're protecting all the time. Okay? That's the me you're sticking up for. Sorry, we got a message from God here. You think I'm kidding? Got approval. Okay? So we were talking yesterday about a me who's there and about a me who's not there. The me who got hurt by my husband was never there. Because the me who got hurt by my husband wasn't to blame for the husband wanting pizza. Okay? That me was never there. Why? Because you're always to blame. By the way, don't get all low self-esteem-y on me. Okay? Don't get all low self-esteem-y on me. Don't get this whip and, you know, start beating yourself up. Oh, you know, it's bad enough that I'm 10 pounds overweight. Now I'm to blame for my husband. You know, I mean, cut me some slack already, you know? Don't make me responsible for everything. Don't think like that, okay? Don't go there. Don't say I'm a bad person. I made my husband insensitive. Don't go there. Just fix it. Just get the sense that you now have power to do anything you want. You can make him, like, wear a tutu now. Okay? Just put the right seeds. You're in control, man. You know, be a little happy. Be a little empowered, you know? Like, yeah, the pizza guy is your fault. But now you can fix him, and you can make him do anything, you know? You can change him into affectionate, thoughtful, dishwashing, garbage-taking out husband, you know? And you have power now. You should. So don't dwell on the, I created this guy who really had pizza. Don't dwell on that. Just clean up the mess. Now you have power. Feel empowered rather than beating yourself up. Because you have power now. You can make anything happen, okay? You can make a $250 million in your free seat. A couple of days a week. If you understand this stuff, you can do weird stuff. You can make weird things happen. Okay? You can have anything. Okay? Just plant it and relax. Just plant watermelon and people don't stand there and like grunt over a watermelon seed, you know? Like they don't like, oh, you know, and come back every day and, you know, just learn how to plant it and then go sit in your house. I have a drip system. with a timer. You know? I go to Bulgaria, and then I go to Ukraine, and then I go to Paris, and I come home and there's a watermelon that I wear. And I didn't do anything. I just stuck the seeds in the ground. So you like it? Like, I was in Bazou, near Marrakesh, and I was staying in Riyadh. And I did a retreat. I cannot go out of the Riyadh. And then my friend, my teacher came to me, a Quran teacher. But then I said, how do I get food, you know? And he said, we took care of it. You know, and I said, what do you mean you took care of it, you know? And he said, come here, you know? And he took me outside. There's a Riyadh is like a hacienda, and there's a courtyard in the middle. And you grow a garden there in the middle of the courtyard, right? And he said, come here, look, you know? And he said, look, what's that? And I said, God, that's corn. And he said, what's that? He said, that's a watermelon. Looks like it's going to be ready tomorrow. And he said, what's over there? He said, that's tomato. You know? You're going to have tomatoes. In 3 days, you're going to have tomatoes. Then I said, what's this little plant? He said, that's Moroccan whiskey. You know? And I said, I thought, Muslim, you can't drink alcohol. You know? He said, no, you don't understand. Then he picked it, and it was mint. And they put a cup of sugar, and then they put a cup of water. And it's like, you drink one cup, and you're like, and you're like, whoa. So we had a whiskey party. And, but the thing is, it's such a cool idea. They plant the seeds in order that they will come up each week. So they planted it before I came. They were so thoughtful. They were so kind. So weeks before I came, months before I came, they started to plant the things that would grow in the order that I needed to be fed in the Riyadh and not leave. I didn't have to leave. It all came, it all, what do you call it? It popped up at the right time, each day. And they planned it that way, you know? So your life has to be like that. You just plant stuff. And then it will pop up in the order that you want. And you don't have to work so hard. You don't have to like go crazy and do all those things. And the worry is all, it's a tragedy. It's an unnecessary, all the worries you ever had are wrong. They're not necessary. It's like throwing rocks at the moon or something. You know, it's all stupid. You know, it's all meaningless. Throw rocks at the moon, throw oranges at the moon, you know? It doesn't do anything. And you don't have to worry. Just plant the seeds in you and relax. And they come up. And you go pick them. And your life is like, I don't know. I wish I could get you to feel it. I wish you could feel it. You just plant seeds and relax. And then you don't worry about them. Because you don't need to. You know something's going to pop up next week. You know, like that. Okay. Yeah. Then, what time we have? Where are we?
9:35.
Okay, one last question. Okay. You it better be good.
Yes.
You're representing the whole
Could bad things happen to you as a part of soul development in this reality?
What do you mean?
Soul development.
Okay, I'll answer. When you first learn, by the way, you need training, okay? I said con técnica, right? You gotta have, you have to know. If I give you a bag of watermelon seeds and say, go home, you're set. Then you throw them on your kitchen floor and you say, he said I could relax now, you know? And nothing will happen, okay? So you have to know how to plant seeds, and that takes some. You need to learn it from somebody, okay? We have like, I don't know, there's 20,000 free pages online. There's 36 free courses online. Someone will check all your work. Someone will Skype with you if you want. These guys doing prisoners for the last 15, 20 years, all over the world. They write their homeworks, they send them in, they pass courses. We have one of our prisoners is teaching meditation in Scottsdale now. And very successful businessman. And, You can learn. We also have a free place. We have classes going on free sometime. Just where are those guys? Stand up. They call it Rebecca Jinmei. Where's Rebecca Jinmei? Stand up. If you can. Or I don't know, Jeff Alexander, Jamie Alexander, where are you? Where's Jeff Eddie? Don't sit down. Jeff Eddie. Where's Christine Wong? Where are you? Stand up. So these guys, the people are standing, you want to know technique, just talk to them. Okay? Just go to their class. Right. And then you're done. You learn it, take it, and never come back. You know, you don't have to join any club or any group, or you don't have to put my picture on the wall. Or, you know, just forget it. Learn what they know and go away and use it, you know. And you have everything you want, okay? Really, okay? It's just there, it's free. What?
Somebody has a question from Bulgaria.
It's too late.
Okay.
Wait, I'm getting there. I go like this. When you plant powerful good seeds, you also have to destroy old bad seeds. We have old bad seeds, which were mostly planted when you were 16 years old. Okay? After writing. You have to learn how to take those seeds out. Because otherwise they're going to block your new seeds. You see what I mean? So that's something you can learn from this guy. It's a long story. In the process of cleaning out bad seeds, if you're not skillful, you can have small explosions. So to answer your question, in the process of spiritual development, the spiritual development itself can cause some small disasters if you don't know what you're doing. So that's why you need training. It's like doing yoga. Like if you try to do some complicated pose and you're not ready yet, then you'll pull something. And it's the same. You need a teacher. You need a human being to help you. And there's lots of them in this room. Okay?
But sometimes those parents
actually help. That's another story. Okay. I think we got it. Okay, I'd like to do one more song. I'm going to make you stay for one more song. Okay, you just have to relax. You don't have. This is like Shavasana. Okay? You can zone out. You don't have to do anything. I'm going to do one. I'd like to do the Gurudev. And he's going to do another song after that, but that's another story. We need a Gurudev. I need a mic. She needs a mic. Maybe can we get a chair? This is a song about finding your teacher. Okay. This is a song about finding your teacher, and I know you're anxious to go dance, and I know you're tired, and you probably got something else to do. But it's meant to plant a seed in your mind to find your heart teacher. Okay? So everybody finds their own heart teacher in their life. If you don't have one, you have to find one. Okay? So this song is meant to plant the seed. And then we'll stop. Okay? Here we go. Thank you.
so many helpers at this stand up. There's so many people to thank, and.